Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning, world. Welcome into Trust the Tape, episode 37,926. I'm Jeff Cavanaugh, going radio voice today. And I'll stop right there. Alongside my co-host, the great Dane Brugler, NFLDraftScout.com. Today, he says he'd like to be called The Brug. So everybody, welcome The Brug.
That's a false fake news.
Oh, I just made that up. But hey, I wanted to start the day with a sweet nickname.
JC, how are we doing today?
The Brew Diggle. Oh, we're doing great. Oh, we have chaos. There's nothing better than chaos in college football.
That's what college football in November. That's what it's for.
Shout out to all the phony teams that we thought were good that got dominated this weekend, and it's over for them. It's all over.
I don't know. Are any teams? I mean, no. I guess Notre Dame.
Everyone's alive.
You're talking about Notre Dame.
No, everyone's alive. Because I don't know what's going to happen the rest of the way. Everyone's alive.
Well, Notre Dame does have that conference champion. Oh, wait. They don't have that conference championship.
Oh, yeah. They have to join a conference. I already told you. That's why they weren't in my top four.
Yeah.
Join a conference.
Well, and then we'll talk. That loss to Miami is a reason why they could benefit from joining a conference, because they'd still be in it if they were in the ACC, if they're in the Big Ten. But because they do have those two losses to two very good teams, Georgia and Miami, they are done. But let's start with Georgia at Auburn. I didn't see that coming. Did you? I thought this would be a competitive game until the end. I still thought Georgia was the better team. And it started as a competitive game. I mean, Georgia had the lead after the first quarter. They went down and scored on their opening drive. It's not like this was a blowout. But after that first quarter, it was just all downhill from there. Jarrett Stidham had a great game. I think he did a nice job taking what the Georgia defense would give him, taking a few timely deep shots. The story of the game for Auburn was Kerryon Johnson at running back, 233 yards of total offense. He has been the difference between Auburn beginning of the year and Auburn now. What he's been able to do on the ground, credit to the offensive line as well. He's averaged over 30 offensive touches the last four games, and he's put himself right back in that Heisman discussion. So he's leading the SEC in rushing, both yards and touchdowns. He doesn't have those dominant physical traits, but at 215 pounds, good speed. I love his decision-making as a runner. So Kerryon Johnson not only has Auburn kind of controlling their own path to a possible playoff spot, but he's also right there in the Heisman discussion for everyone except Baker Mayfield.
Well, yeah, no, Baker already won it.
He's the favorite. He's clear favorite. But
the Georgia-Auburn game went the exact opposite of what I thought was going to happen. I'm kind of used to Georgia controlling the line of scrimmage on defense and running it down people's throats whenever they want to.
Yeah.
And it just kind of flipped. But I have a new appreciation, because I'm a guy who talks about college sports without ever having been to a major college game, which is my fault. So I'd like to apologize to everyone. I now understand that home field advantage matters. I was in Norman over the weekend.
This is the first and home big-time field college?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And now I've been to Abilene Christian games
as
one of the greatest players of all time to never record a stat. But never to a major college game. And just being in Norman and watching that TCU game, I understand what it can be like playing in front of 80 to 100,000 that go bonkers when you have the ball and are dead silent when their team has the ball. Well, that's quite an advantage for Auburn.
Especially when you have a true freshman quarterback at Georgia. And that's what Auburn did. They shut down the run. I don't think Georgia had a rush on the ground for double digits. So shut down the run, and then you force Fromm to beat you through the air, which he hasn't proven at this point that he can do. I mean, he's proven he can make a few timely throws, but we know that Georgia offense is built on the running game with Michelle and Chubb and the freshmen and the young guys. So yeah, credit to Auburn. And the SEC is going to be really interesting now these last 3 weeks.
Can Auburn beat Bama? They can. They got them at home, too.
After what we saw with Alabama and Mississippi State, and Mississippi State had the lead into the fourth quarter, and they had a very good chance to win that game. Alabama, with the injuries they have on defense, at the linebacker position especially, Minka Fitzpatrick beat up a little bit. You know, Jalen Hurts is a good player, but he's not a dominant player. He's not a guy that's going to put a team on his back on offense, especially when Calvin Ridley's basically, you know, his main target, and then it's a big drop off after that.
Calvin Ridley's a badass.
He is, absolutely. But it's going to set up for a pretty exciting Iron Bowl, and I don't think that's something we were thinking a couple weeks ago.
What do they play for? Is that the Iron Skillet? What do they play for?
I honestly don't know. Is there a trinket that they play for? Maybe.
I don't know. I'll have to check it. I'll figure it out. Yeah. I'll let you know.
But it's really setting up for a fun ending, and you know we'll get to the playoff here in a little bit. But man, the committee could have some tough decisions to make with. Based on some of the outcomes of these games the next few weeks. But moving on with some of the other recaps, Notre Dame at Miami, another one where...
Blowout.
I didn't see that coming.
Destroyed. I thought Miami was the fraud.
Well, you're talking about home field advantage?
We
bust on Miami quite a bit when, you know, it's a noon kick and the stadium's half full. And, you know, but you look at game day and the crowd they had there, and then at night... At that stadium, it was rocking.
That's because game day was probably symbolic of Miami having a football team again. Like, it's been a long time, and now you get to be Miami again.
Were you talking about symbolic? How about the chain? I mean,
chain is awesome.
At first, I thought that it's kind of cheesy, but watching that game on Saturday night and after a turnover, seeing the guy who made the interception. You know, Jaquan Johnson at safety, race over the sideline, his teammates racing with him, everyone going nuts, the assistant coach placing, you know, I knight you with this
the
with
ceremony
this chain.
Of gold chain.
And it's amazing how it's just this unifying thing for that team, and it works. And so,
really unfortunate that that's what it takes to get guys to play hard, is that they need to get to be able to win the chain. Well, that's why Miami's been bad for so long. They didn't have the chain. Now that they got it, they play hard.
We're talking about 19, 20, 21-year-old kids. You know, you don't know what buttons to push sometimes, but hey, if that's what it's going to take, so be it. But that was a fun game for if you're a Miami fan. For Notre Dame, at least...
Thoughts and prayers.
You knew it was over pretty quickly, at least. You know, I don't think it was like a heartbreaker where you lost in the fourth quarter. You knew pretty quickly it was over.
I just kept watching the scoreboard because I'm at the OU game. I just kept watching. They had I had the Bama game on TV, so I'd watch it a little bit. But the Notre Dame-Miami game, it might have been on. I don't know. But they just have a scoreboard that runs around the stadium a little bit, and it'll pop up scores once in a while. And I was just counting every new Miami touchdown. It was like 20-something, 30-something. Well, wow!
The key to the game was, you know, the athleticism of the Miami defensive line versus the power of the Notre Dame offensive line. But Miami showed power, too, because they overwhelmed that offensive line at times. Josh Adams had 2.5 yards per rush. And again, you know, we talk about with Georgia, you shut down the run, make the true freshman beat you. That's the recipe against Notre Dame. You shut down the run, you make Brandon Wimbush put the ball in the air, and we saw the results. It was not pretty. A couple of interceptions, especially that pick six right before halftime. That was just a killer. That you know, really knocked Notre Dame out of this game very early. So, you know, I've heard the, you know, is Miami back so many times the last, you know, 48, 36 hours, but... I don't know. If they get to the playoff,
it's the closest they've been in a long time to being back.
It is. Now, if they get to the playoff, I think a little more validity to that. But it's that ACC championship game is setting up to be fun. We talking about the Iron Bowl, how that's setting up to be fun. Clemson, hey, they made it interesting against Florida State. They barely pulled it out at the end. But that Clemson versus Miami in the ACC championship game, it's a play-in game for the playoff, assuming still have a few more games to go. Clemson has to beat South Carolina. Miami, I think, has what? Virginia and Pitt. So a couple more games to go. But assuming they win out, that should be a fun ending to the ACC, which has a certainly has a...
The best conference in football, Dane. They got two teams in
resume.
The top four.
This week they will.
The ACC is the best conference. It's not the best conference. Who's next, Dane? Which team should we talk about?
Let's talk about what the game where you were at.
Yeah!
TCU at Oklahoma. The game was in Norman.
Never close.
I don't think that this was as surprising as the first two games we talked about. I think, you know, Oklahoma's favored. They had, you know, arguably the best player in the country with Baker Mayfield. And I think you're right. It wasn't close.
He wasn't the best.
As you say.
Well, he was the best player on the field, but he didn't even have the best game on the field.
Yeah.
The best game was OU's running back, Rodney Anderson, who I'd never heard of coming into this year. And so I had to tweet at you because after seeing a game live and watching that dude run the ball, catch the ball, run routes.
He's good.
I don't know if I saw him in pass protection. If I did, I didn't care because I wouldn't pay attention to it because I was drinking beer and watching college football. But the dude can run the ball.
Yeah.
He runs through tacklers. He runs around tacklers. He catches it. He even catches it down the field. Like, that dude is a player.
Yeah, he really is.
Rodney Anderson is a freaking player. And he got there, it looks like, in 2015. And I guess he got hurt a lot because he had a medical red shirt.
Yeah.
Then didn't play in 16 with another injury. So it's his first go, but he would be draft eligible.
He would.
Right?
He would. Come on, Rodney. He missed all of last year with a neck injury, and then coming into this year with Perine gone, with Mixon gone, a lot of questions about, okay, who's going to be that running back that steps up? And Rodney Anderson, he didn't play much over the first half of the season. I think he only had like 15 touches total the first five games, still working him back from that neck injury. But the last 4 or 5 weeks, he's been on a tear against TCU, which TCU came into this week number 6 in the nation in total defense. I bet
they're like number 15 now.
They were exposed in this game. They're not a top 10 defense in college football. They're still a solid defense. Gary Patterson coach defense. Rodney Anderson, 151 yards rushing, 139 yards receiving, 4 total touchdowns. He's emerged as the most important player on that team, not named Baker Mayfield, with the contributions that he can. He takes so much pressure off of Mayfield because then he doesn't have to do as much. With his arm. He doesn't have to run as much. So that takes a lot of pressure off Mayfield. It's kind of like Kerryon Johnson, what he's been for Auburn down the stretch. That's what Rodney Anderson is proving to be for Oklahoma. Really kicking it into gear at the right time to make this late surge. So for Oklahoma, you have to feel really good about your playoff chances at this point. A couple games left to go, but...
Well, and with Baker, I get to make outlandish statements. You can't because you've already done tape study on all these guys before the year started, so you can rank them more properly. Give me Baker Mayfield. If I'm playing a football game, forget Josh Rosen, forget Josh Allen. Give me Baker Mayfield. The only thing that he's going to get knocked for is he's going to be 6 foot tall. That's going to be his only shortcoming. He's got the arm. He doesn't run to run. He runs to throw. He's moving around to throw. He feels the pocket. He reads a defense. He delivers an accurate ball. Baker Mayfield looks like he has everything except height.
Based on what you knew of Baker Mayfield going in, what you've seen on TV, and now that you saw him in person at the game.
I saw him after the game, too, walking to the car.
Yeah.
He's not real big. I might want him to add about 8 to 10 pounds.
How did your opinion change of him? What are your thoughts now? Because, I mean, seeing a guy in person, I remember when I saw Carson Wentz at North Dakota State in person for the first time at the FCS championship game. I was sold right then and there. Seeing him play in person, seeing the ball come off his hand, seeing him interact with his teammates, all of that, I was, okay, this guy's a first-round pick. No, don't. I mean, it's an easy pick. With Baker Mayfield, what was it like for you seeing him in person compared to kind of the preconceived notions and just based on what you saw on TV before?
I thought when you watch him, you can see that a college football game, like, it's chaos, right? That's it's chaos. But it looks easy for him.
He thrives in chaos.
Like, that moment is so easy for him. It's like, I don't care where defenders are. Yes, I'm going to escape. Yes, I'm going to break the tackle, whatever. And it looks like he is totally calm while everything around him is insane. And I wonder how he's going to stack up on the intangible meter. Because, the guy drinks beer. Like, listen, I don't know if I can say this. After the game, he's walking by. I'm there with my girlfriend, her sister. Her sister's boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Her sister is a young, attractive lady who says, "Let's get baked." She yells it at Baker. He turns and says, "You got a beer?" It's like, "Oh, no, Baker, don't say that." Of course, I don't think he knew he was walking by a world famous media guy.
Breaking news on Trust the Tape.
Yeah, in an OU hoodie. Just like, no, stop with the beer. Like, we're trying to get drafted here, man.
He likes the party. I don't think that's...
And that's not a check mark in the intangible box. But
right.
where he does get it, I think, at least on that team, is as the unquestioned leader.
Yeah.
Like, before that game, he called out the fans, not in a negative way, but he called out the fans like, "Hey, you need us to play. I need you. We need you to show up.
You heard your captain and you went right to Norman to support
him. I did. I heard him. So I went running because I was told I had to by my girlfriend. And like, he comes out and after half, Their whole team runs out in their line so the crowd can cheer. He doesn't go with the line. He does a full lap around the stadium doing the hands up like, come on, let's go. This thing's not over. Like, he is born to lead.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to check a lot of boxes unless beer is a problem.
Well, it doesn't seem like that energy is forced in any way. It seems like that's just natural. Like, that's he's a caffeinated
pop. He's a swag daddy.
Pop.
He's a swag daddy.
He's, yeah,
love it or hate it.
And it's genuine. It really does feel like that. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting because, you know, a lot of people thought Manziel had the intangibles because of some of those same things, those same qualities. But the difference here is Mayfield's much older. I mean, he's an older guy. And you have to hope.
He's legally drinking.
True. Exactly. That's a good point.
That counts.
It does count. So, with Mayfield, I think teams are going to be sold on him based on the on-field and the off-field charisma and what he brings to not only the field, but the locker room and your team. And
I think I just need to see him on the chalkboard. Like, you're an NFL front office and coaching staff, here's what we do, or here's what's going to be different from what you're doing here, and can he soak that up and spit it back out? Like, is he a book guy? Does he care?
The physical traits don't bother me as much. You know, he's going to measure probably 6'5", around there, between 6 foot and 6'1". I do think it would benefit him to put on a few more pounds. I mean, he's probably going to be 210, 215. If he can get closer to 220, great. I think that's all you need. Arm strength, I'm fine with. Biggest thing for me is, and you don't necessarily see this on TV, but when you watch him on tape, his eyes, and you mentioned how he's comfortable when everything gets chaotic and frantic. I think his mind is fine because he has such a quick processor, but his eyes are so frantic that a lot of times he'll miss open receivers. He'll lose track of defenders. We saw that in the Oklahoma State game, especially that
when he threw the pick at the end.
Yeah, his eyes are. I mean, he goes through his progressions. He sees the whole field, but sometimes he's so quick doing it that he misses defenders, and that can lead to some mistakes. And then I was watching the Texas tape last week. And there was a moment, I'll have to tweet out this video, but he's so frantic, so moving around, and his eyes are all over the place. There's a wide open receiver in the end zone right in front of him, 20 yards away, and he just couldn't see him. So I think if he can learn to calm his eyes and get better in that respect, that's something that I want to see him do. But again, we're talking about a first-round player here. We're talking about a guy who, again, coming into the year, over the summer, I thought second round, that's the grade I have on him. But I've only liked him more and more the more I've seen him.
Athleticism is becoming so important. Like, escapability is becoming so important.
Definitely.
His offensive line play is getting worse and worse. I just watched Dak Prescott almost die. Like, you've got to be able to move in this league now. So I think he's got that as a big old check mark.
And it'll be interesting with the Senior Bowl. He's going to get an invite. And if you're Baker Mayfield, you know, and he's clear.
Senior Bowl has helped so many high draft picks lately that I think people, because I think a lot of people would dodge it because it's like, well, what if I go out there and somebody's better than me? What if, you know, what if it hurts my stock?
AJ McCarron did that. Connor Cook did that. Yeah. Geno Smith did that. There are plenty of quarterbacks that have done that. But
it's helped
you.
So many.
It only helps you. It really does. Because if you go in and you struggle a little bit.
Zach Martin, Aaron Donald, Sheldon Rankins, like so many guys got propelled up by the Senior Bowl.
And let's just keep it at the quarterback position for now. I mean, you look at Dak and Carson Wentz, what they did. But I think, if you struggle a little bit, you know what? You're thrown into a situation with guys you never played with coaching you've never had before. You're expected to struggle a little bit. But if you go in and show that you're competent, then guess what? You're gonna help yourself. You're going to get that NFL coaching. You're going to take snaps under center. You're going to throw to NFL-style routes. So for Baker Mayfield, going to the Senior Bowl, hopefully he accepts. Hopefully he goes. Because it'd be great to see him in that setting right next to some of these other quarterbacks. I think Josh Allen, he's going to get an invite. Mason Rudolph will get an invite. Luke Falk will get an invite. Then it'll be interesting to see who get those final two. I think JT Barrett has a good chance of getting one. So hopefully Baker accepts when he does get that invite, because it'd be great to see him there.
All right. What else we got to do? Good. I like a good Baker Mayfield talk.
I got a bunch of notes we want to run through here quick.
Okay.
The whole college landscape. Stanford beat Washington on Friday night. That was kind of a shocker. But
well, that killed the Pac-12.
It pretty much does.
In peace.
Could USC, if they win out, and they'll be a two-loss Pac-12 champion if they win out.
You would need help. You can't go in ahead of a two-loss SEC champ.
Or a two-loss Ohio State.
As long as you have a one-loss big, like the Big 12 needs to have a one-loss champion.
Right.
They're in trouble too, right? So like OU now, you have to beat TCU again. Now, after watching those two play, I don't doubt that they will. I'm sorry, Horned Frogs.
Yeah.
But if they play again, like, think about this. OU didn't try in the second half on offense. Oh, they really didn't. They had 38 at half, and their plan was run, run, pass, punt.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it gets close, we'll open it back up. Like, they just coasted out an entire half of football. So I don't think they have a problem being a one-loss champ. So I think OU is going to make the playoff. The ACC title game will determine a playoff spot. The SEC title game will determine a playoff spot. Three are gone.
And we have, and that kind of brings us to Ohio State. This is the elephant in the room because no one knew what to expect after they got blown out by Iowa. They go back home to face a Michigan State team that's actually ranked ahead of them
and
in the rankings.
And destroyed them.
It wasn't even close. We buried them last week. Now we're kind of, okay, let's get the shovels. Let's get them back up. They're right there. I mean, if they win out, they've got a good chance of making it. And we'll get to the playoff here in a second, but I do want to share something. I tweeted this yesterday.
They have a really good chance.
Yeah, they do.
Because I'm just thinking through it, like, your SEC champ, no matter how many losses, is going to be in, but now the loser of that game's probably out unless it's Bama. Bama loses the title game and it's their first loss, that could be the team that keeps Ohio State out.
Even if Alabama loses in the Iron Bowl, they might still have a good chance because they're Alabama. But if Alabama wins out, good chance Ohio State's in.
Yeah, yeah. I think Alabama determines Ohio State's fate.
I've got a game here. We're going to play in a second.
Bring a game. I like games. Let me check my phone because I tweeted earlier to see if anybody had questions.
Well, okay, I tweeted this earlier with JT Barrett. We've talked about him a lot on this podcast. What about his draft prospects?
I don't think he's an NFL player, which means late round someone will pick him.
I texted three scouts and asked them, will Barrett be drafted? First one said, let me make sure I'm getting this right. First one says, my gut says no. Second one said, probably, but not by us. And the third one said, oh yeah, he is this year's Dobbs.
Well, Dobbs couldn't play.
Of course, referring to Joshua Dobbs, who's a mid-round pick to
the
Steelers.
So were his intangibles just incredible? Because he had bad tape. He couldn't play.
The intangibles were off the charts.
Okay.
Smart. He's a leader. But he had a physical skill set. And that's what JT Barrett has. He probably doesn't have as strong of an arm as Dobbs. But he's not very tall, but he's thick. He's a very good athlete. And the intangibles are through the roof. So JT Barrett, I think there's a good chance he'll be at the Senior Bowl. Good chance he does get drafted by a team looking to, look at the resume, look at the intangibles. Some team will take a chance on that. But it would be good to see him in Mobile, see how he'd perform there. Lamar Jackson, a little bit of a forgotten guy because Louisville is basically a 500 team this year, but he went over 100 yards rushing for the fourth straight game. As a passer against Virginia, a little bit of mixed results. I charted every one of his throws, and it was basically the same thing we've seen. On throws under 15 yards, he was accurate. 16 of 17 throws. Really impressive. On throws 16-plus yards, he had 10 of them. Only 4 were accurate. And that's really been, I think he's improved with his touch, with his timing.
I was looking at my Twitter. This is Lamar?
Yeah.
Okay.
But downfield, that's where he's really struggled. And that's where there's going to be a lot of doubt about his NFL transition because
Isn't that still first round, though?
In my mind, yeah. But in the NFL's mind, I don't know. I mean, the closest thing to probably Lamar Jackson that we've seen in recent years is RG3, maybe. He went second overall, but he flamed out pretty quickly.
Right.
Now,
maybe he wouldn't have flamed out if he never hurt a knee.
Yeah, the ACL, who knows how much that would play into it. But
Lamar's a threat to do that, too.
Exactly.
Because he's not going to be a guy that doesn't run in the league. He's going to run.
Exactly. When Lamar Jackson he's not a big guy. I mean, he's height-wise, he's fine, but he has a leaner frame. I mean, he's put on some muscle, but he's not a thick dude. So,
I think this is going to be a fascinating quarterback class.
Oh, no question.
Because you can watch Rosen play, and you're like, that looks like the quarterback position supposed to be playing
clean.
When he's on.
Yeah.
But give me the guys who have the ups and downs. He has ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
But give me the athletic guys, because I think that's where the NFL is going. Like, you can be the guy that looks like Marino when you're on, but give me the dude that's going to escape and extend plays and make plays and
Well, and that's
and
why
can
Baker
run.
Has a very good chance of going top 20 because not only does he have that athleticism, but he has the arm too. And I mean, that touchdown pass to the tight end in that game was phenomenal. I mean, just perfect touch, perfect placement.
The running back, too, the one where he sent Rodney Anderson down the middle, they ran the Saquon Barkley, and it's like, it's perfectly covered, but you just put it on the guy, the defender's helmet, and let your guy take it from him.
Great catch. Yeah, I mean, it really was. And that's what separates Mayfield. And Lamar Jackson had one of those throws. One of the touchdowns he threw against Virginia was a perfect touch pass. It wasn't a deep pass. I mean, they were already in the red zone, but perfectly placed over the corner shoulder right into the hands of the receiver. So Lamar Jackson has some of that. Just need to see some more of it down the field.
The thing is that all of these, the runners, like they had team success, even if the numbers weren't beautiful. Vince Young, the numbers weren't beautiful, and he couldn't really throw by NFL standards.
Right.
And he won. Like, does Lamar throw it better than Vince?
Yeah.
And he's a better athlete.
He's not quite as big, not nearly as big.
Yeah, but that's the NFL's fault for caring that much about size.
Yeah, but in today's, I know, it's weird to think, what would we be talking about?
He's a better runner and he's a better thrower than Vince Young. I'll take him.
Yeah, but Vince Young also shouldn't have gone as high as he did.
And,
I don't know. I mean, it's something that is, will he be a first-round pick? At the end of the day, I don't know.
Is RG3 a better thrower? Maybe.
Yeah, he was so good on downfield throws.
Yeah,
he was so good connecting with what's his name, Kendall Wright.
Yeah,
I mean, he was so good at Baylor. I mean, I get that was the Baylor offense. I don't, you know,
RG3 was a little bit better prospect. You think?
I think so. Yeah, okay. Just because he was more of a proven downfield guy. Baylor offense helps a lot. But I don't know. We'll have to see with Lamar Jackson. A couple other guys I want to talk about. Josh Jackson out of Iowa, the corner. We got to talk about him.
Holy cow. Did he just like show up this year?
He didn't start yet until this year.
He just keeps intercepting all the passes, and now he runs them back.
He is basically a wide receiver playing corner, and he has corner instincts, corner size, corner athleticism. Iowa only scored 2 touchdowns against Wisconsin, and he had both of them. 2 pick sixes. He now has 5 picks the last 2 weeks. He has the Thorpe Award. I mean, it's done. And I think he should be a first-round pick the way he's been playing.
Heck yeah.
Senior Bowl invite started to go out. SMU receiver Cortland Sutton has received his.
Has he picked it up at all? I know early in the season, stats-wise, it was like, where's Cortland?
He has. He has picked it up a little bit. And I hope he goes to the Senior Bowl. He could be a top-3 player there. I want to see him. My biggest issue with him is play speed and NFL routes. You know, a lot of questions we had with Laquon Treadwell, which have proven to be a bigger issue than we thought they would be.
I've heard he has a little bit of a playbook issue as well.
A lot of it's mental. And with Cortland Sutton, not saying the same is true with him, but going to the Senior Bowl will really help quell some of those concerns about, you know, running a full route tree and does he have the play speed to separate. So those one-on-one matchups, corner versus wide receiver at the Senior Bowl, are so valuable. So hopefully Cortland Sutton accepts his invite. It'd be great to see him there. And then speaking of the Senior Bowl, Josh Allen, he's going to be a first-round pick. I think we just need to accept it.
That's fine. I'll just blast whoever took him and say that they made a bad pick.
He was knocked out of the game on Saturday night. His AC joint had a sprain. Tried to come back in. It took one pass, and he took himself out. He was done. But the good news is it's not a tear, just a sprain. So he's day-to-day, game-time decision for this weekend. But more importantly, he should be okay for the Senior Bowl. Hopefully this doesn't give him an excuse not to play in the Senior Bowl now. But, you know, hopefully he's healthy enough by late January where he plays. Because that's another, talking about JT Barrett, how much he can gain from being in Mobile. Josh Allen especially, a lot to gain from that. So, let's talk about the playoff predictions.
All right, so Scani is going to be the first team out, even though they're still undefeated. Well, I just don't think they have the win for
the top 4 seems to be...
Yeah, it's just a matter of order. Is like, will Miami jump the 1-loss teams with that Notre Dame win? And I think that...
I think Alabama will be 1.
I think Alabama will be 1, but will Miami jump OU and Clemson?
Probably.
I think they will too. So I would say Miami 2, OU 3, because they had the more impressive win, and Clemson 4.
I agree. I think that'll be the top 4. 2, 3, 4 could be a little different based
and
on
then
the order.
Scani.
But Wisconsin's sitting there at 5. And so, okay, I think realistically there are probably 8 teams that are in it. Georgia, Alabama.
Until 6 of them lose, we'll have to talk about new teams.
As of right now. No, I mean, I really think these are the 4 teams that come out of these 8.
Okay. Bama, Auburn, Georgia.
Yep.
All still have a chance.
Right. SEC.
OU, You think TCU's probably dead.
I think they're done.
So OU's the only Big 12 team, yeah, probably with a shot. Miami, Clemson.
Right.
Ohio State, Scani.
Yep. That's the eight I have.
Look at that.
So, okay. All right. Two scenarios for you. You tell me the last team in. Scenario one, Alabama. They went out. Clemson wins out. They beat.
They're both in.
Oklahoma wins out. They're in.
They're in.
Where's the fourth spot go? Oh, and Ohio State wins the Big Ten. They win out. So it basically would come down to.
The two-loss Ohio State's going to go in over two-loss Pac-12 team in Notre Dame.
What about one-loss Miami, who lost to Clemson a close in the title game? To Clemson.
I will take the conference champion because I actually think that Ohio State's probably the better team there. I think I'll take the better team.
In the past, I think we've seen the conference champion can be that, you know, that what gets the team over the top. And I think that.
Although Miami's only loss would be to a top team, and right. Ohio State's two losses would be to a playoff team and a.
And remember, the committee cares more about your wins than your losses.
Yeah.
And Miami, they have that win over Notre Dame, but that's probably, that's easily their best win.
Right. And then it's like Virginia Tech.
Right. And Ohio State, they would have wins over Penn State, Michigan State, Michigan, and Wisconsin, and undefeated Wisconsin.
Right.
That probably gets them the edge over them. Okay. We agree there. Scenario two, Auburn upsets Alabama, which after this weekend seems a lot more plausible. And then Auburn beats Georgia.
Auburn's in
at two losses. Clemson, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin went out. So
Bama is out.
Alabama's in.
Auburn's in.
Auburn's in. Two loss SEC champ. One loss Big 12 champ. Oklahoma, they're in. Undefeated Wisconsin, they're in, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And so one loss Clemson.
They're in and Bama is out.
Yeah.
Because they Bama's lost to the title game. Yeah. I mean, Bama, for all they're Alabama and they're number one. If the committee's honest, they don't have the wins.
No, they don't have the wins. Their most impressive win is, if to this point, is Mississippi State, which they barely squeaked out.
Yeah, and they were barely ranked, right? Mississippi State was in the high teens or something.
They beat LSU. I mean, that wasn't a close game, but it wasn't a blowout either. So, you know, I think you're right. Alabama doesn't have, I mean, Florida State, that looked like a great win for about a week. That we know what that is now, and so it's
Bama doesn't have the resume; they've just got the name.
Until the Iron Bowl, if they beat Auburn,
and then the SEC title game,
right? And so, what if Georgia beats Alabama in the SEC title game?
Oh no!
Because then they'd have the Auburn win, and then the SEC still has a chance to get two teams in. Might not be the most likely scenario, but they have a chance.
But it would be made easier if. Basically, Ohio State has another loss somewhere, and can they still win the conference that way? Can they still get to the title game if they lose a game?
Technically, they could lose to Illinois this weekend and still do it, but
I'm just trying to find my way to get two SEC teams.
Okay, well, let's say,
otherwise, I think it's going to be tough.
Okay, let's say that a two-loss Big Ten champ.
Oh, you know what would help them? What would help them is if OU lost the Big 12 title game.
Yeah, that would help.
Then two SEC teams could go.
So you would take a two-loss Ohio State champ over a one-loss Alabama who lost a close game to Georgia in the SEC championship game.
Yeah, because if I'm the committee and I'm being honest, they don't have the resume.
But they would have an Auburn win.
They have a win.
The Auburn win would look good, and they lost. Barely lose to Georgia on a neutral field, which honestly.
And they've already beaten them.
That SEC championship game, well, they haven't beat. Alabama hasn't beat Georgia. The SEC championship game is
Auburn beat Georgia.
Basically a home game for Georgia. It would be an interesting discussion because you can't forget. I mean, you're human. You can't really let go of the Alabama cachet that it brings and Saban and all that to. Go the entire season without a loss, except for the final game, the SEC championship game. You barely lose a squeaker to Georgia.
And Ohio State has two.
Got blown out.
One much worse loss.
Right.
And one similar loss.
And we've seen in Ohio State. And see, like,
I'd keep Ohio State out because I'm an Ohio State hater. So, yeah, I could keep them out and put Bama in that scenario.
That'd be a fascinating one to see how they would handle that because conference championship matters.
And it's two big brands.
Yeah, you can't go wrong, really. could they keep Alabama out? That'd be fascinating. Heisman, do we even need to talk about it? I mean, I think
it's Baker's Heisman to lose. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, if you want to fill in the blanks after that, it's Baker Mayfield's Heisman to lose.
I do think we need to talk about Kerryon Johnson. Just mention his name because think about it. If he in the Iron Bowl, the stage is set for him.
Yeah.
What he's done the last few weeks against Alabama in the Iron Bowl, if he goes off and then against Georgia again, I mean, he has. It's going to be tough to catch Baker, but if Baker, say, he stumbles a little bit against West Virginia or whoever, and Kerryon Johnson goes off, you can't rule him out.
I tell you what, West Virginia can score a little bit, and OU still has a bad defense.
Yeah, they
do. It's not impossible.
No, in the Big 12, we've seen weirder stuff happen, so it's that'll be interesting. Any good questions this week?
I got a ton of them. I don't know if we have time for a ton of them. Hold on, let me get to them. Just stand there. Look pretty, Dane. I'll be with you in a second. Here we go. I'm in. Okay. Tell me all about the linebackers. Ask Dane what each of them had for breakfast, because he probably knows that too. I don't think Dane knows that, but the teams that need linebacker help, what does the very top of that look like?
A couple SEC guys. Roquan Smith, the Georgia linebacker, he's a magnet to the ball. Play speed's outstanding. Tick undersized. We see that sometimes show up, but Roquan Smith's outstanding. Rashawn Evans at Alabama's, he's so much fun to watch. Mentality-wise, like the play speed and the aggressiveness that he plays with reminds you a little bit of Reuben Foster. He's a big guy, 6'2", 235 pounds. He can rush the passer. He can play. I want to see him a little more in coverage before we give him a final grade, but there's a lot to like about Rashawn Evans, and he's kind of the last man standing for Alabama in that linebacker group. A couple more underclassmen, Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech. Malik Jefferson from Texas is going to be an interesting one because he's so athletic. But the instincts, they're just not there yet. They're underdeveloped. So that'll be interesting to watch. But a couple linebackers to watch this year in the top 40, top 50 picks.
Between middle linebacker, or I guess you could say inside linebacker, and offensive tackles in this draft, which group is smaller and will be gone quickly?
Well, offensive tackles will always go quicker. I mean, it's supply and demand. And this year, the offensive tackle class it's hard to get excited about it. Mike McGlinchey, Notre Dame's a top senior. I think he'll end up in the first round just because of the need that is there in the NFL. He's a much better run blocker than he is in pass protection. He's not bad in pass protection. He just has some troubles versus edge speed at times. The one to watch is Connor Williams from Texas. He's missed basically this entire year. He's trying to come back this weekend for Texas against West Virginia. We'll see if he can and what he looks like when he's back on the field. Last year, his tape looked like a first-round pick. This year against Maryland, he looked terrible. And then, of course, he had the injury. So Connor Williams, he's kind of the wild card in all this. I think he's gone. He's leaving after this year. If he wasn't, I think he would have had the surgery, but instead he didn't. So I think he's gone. And then you have a few interesting guys. Orlando Brown from Oklahoma. He's a big dude who blocks out the sun. He's not what you typically draw up in a left tackle, but there's a lot to like about him. So Orlando Brown's interesting. Mitch Hyatt's interesting. These offensive tackle class, we've got a lot to figure out.
Dalton on Twitter says, early edge rankings. I think I'm higher and lower on some than others. Looking to hear from Dane on his early list.
Well, the seniors, you have Bradley Chubb, and then Harold Landry. Boston College has kind of fallen off. He's been invisible this year. Bradley Chubb's the top guy. I think he's pencil him in your top 10. And then Marcus Davenport from UT San Antonio. He's making a surge. He's going to have a big pre-draft process. Wouldn't shock me if he's in the first round discussion when it's all said and done. And then Arden Key's finally playing like Arden Key again. So that's good to see. The off-field stuff, it might be compared to Randy Gregory, not as bad, but you just kind of worry about it. We'll see how that plays out. The two Clemson dudes, Austin Bryant and Farrell, I think both those guys have a chance to be in the first round. It's an interesting class. There's some guys that you really like, the athleticism, guys like Jeff Holland from Auburn, Josh Sweat from Florida State, Mata Afa from Washington State. It's really fun. So I like the potential of this edge class, no kidding.
Last question is, Dane, tell us about smoking a turkey.
I've smoked a turkey breast. I've never done a whole turkey.
What do you do? My dad fries the turkey. He's got the little fryer. He worries about burning the house down, but it comes out very moist and delicious.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to fry it and you know what you're doing, then that's the best way to do it. Yeah. Smoking.
It's hard to keep a turkey moist.
No, it is. And with frying, you get that, you know, the skin gets all nice and crunchy. When you smoke, that's the toughest part when you do a whole bird is whether it's chicken, whether it's turkey, is just the skin. It doesn't get that crunch that you want. It gets a little soft, a little rubbery. Now the taste is great. No matter what you do, just brine. That's step number one. Brine your bird. That is the best way to get the most flavor out of whatever you're cooking.
What does that mean? Like soak it in a salt water?
Salt. Yeah, they've got different packages you can get, but I do a cup of sugar, brown sugar, a cup of salt, and then some spices, some rosemary, some different things like that, some garlic. Overnight, 24 hours, not even 24 hours, 12 to 18 hours is all you need. That's the best way to get your bird more juicy, more tender. That's the first step you need to do.
That's what you're here for, Dane. All right, he's at DP Brugler on Twitter.
Wait, real quick, we got to do
next week. I'm at JC1053 on Twitter, and we're so excited to preview next week.
I have good news and bad news.
Not a great schedule.
The good news is week 13 is awesome. Bad news is this is week 12.
Oh, dang.
So, yeah, it's...
Unless there's an upset.
We have Michigan at Wisconsin. That'll be probably our ranked game. And then a couple games later, what, USC, UCLA, the battle of the quarterbacks.
The chosen ones.
Yeah, exactly. So that'll be interesting. But
the tall white dudes that throw good.
My advice, if you have like a honey-do list or you have something you have to do for the girlfriend, the wife, the family, whatever, get it done this weekend. Because you want to make sure you free up the following weekend, the Friday, Saturday after Thanksgiving, for all that college football action. So,
well, follow me on Twitter.
Get it done.
Because we're going to, my friend Kevin Turner will have a watch party, and we're doing it early this Saturday. We're doing it early.
Nice.
Because there's a couple early games that we decided are good enough to
where
do
at?
It. I don't remember. So okay. That's why I said follow me on Twitter.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't remember. That's how you promote stuff.
Perfect.
But if you're in the DFW area, I'm looking for you Saturday morning. We're going to have a great time. We good?
We're good.
We're good. All right. We'll see you next week. Trust the tape and stuff. Hey, give us a 5-star review for crying out loud. And why don't you tell a friend about the podcast? Say it's the best podcast there is, the best there was, and perhaps the best there ever will be. And you got to listen. And so 5-star review us. Don't do 4. That's disrespectful and it makes people think we're not good. So do 5 and then leave your favorite farm animal as a comment. Thanks. We'll see you next week.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.